Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran. My guest is Christine Rollick, the Research Development Coordinator with the Faculty of Agricultural and Food Sciences National Center for Livestock and the Environment at the University of Manitoba. Thanks for joining us, Christine.
You're welcome, Bruce. Glad to be here.
First of all, a little bit of background. What is the National Center for Livestock and the Environment, and what is its primary role and mandate?
The National Center for Livestock and the Environment, or NICL as we call it, has been around for about 10 years now, and really simply put, NICL is a community of researchers representing a variety of expertise: animal, soil, plant, food scientists, economists, engineers, etc., that come together to conduct research aimed at improving the environmental and overall sustainability of animal agriculture. And the focus is on specific livestock species, and the main ones being pigs and cattle.
In terms of research coordinated through NICL, what has been the key focus? What have been the key focus areas over the past year? And who actually has been involved in that work?
This past year, the focus with NICL and the faculty overall has been wrapping up research projects supported under Growing Forward 2 and preparing proposals for the next five-year block of funding through the Ag Cluster programs under the Canadian Agricultural Partnership, or CAP, such as the Swine Cluster, Swine Innovation Pork. Specifically with swine-related research, the key focus areas have been and will continue to be swine nutrition and health, PEDV virus research, barn design features for group house sows, looking specifically at flooring, and manure management research. So there are a number of researchers in our faculty that are directly involved in swine-related research. So for example, swine nutritionist Martin Neachodi and Cheng Bo Yang lead research to identify feed ingredients, feed additives, alternatives to antibiotics for optimal pig health. Isan Kafapur leads the PEDV virus research program and gut microbiome research. Lori Connor and Chong Zhang in biosystems engineering collaborate on sow housing research, and soil scientist Don Flayton leads the current manure management research.
With regards to work exploring the long-term impact of using manure nutrients as fertilizer, what specifically is being looked at and how?
Since 2007, Don Flayton and Trevor Fraser in soil science have been running a continuous trial at the NICL Long-Term Field Laboratory located out at Glenlee, and they're looking at what happens to manure nutrients over a several-year period when applied either annually at nitrogen-based rates or on an intermittent basis, kind of approximating the phosphorus-based rates. So what's unique about this project is that most field studies are up to 3 years long, and so this is, we're in our 10th year now of the study. And so the first phase of the study up until 2015 provided the data to answer questions like, what are the long-term benefits of using manure as fertilizer? What are the risks to the environment? What's coming out in terms of productivity or the economics of using manure? How do different manure sources or types of manure compare to synthetic fertilizer? And do the answers to these questions change if manure is applied at different frequencies?
What have been the key findings of the manure nutrient research?
Well, as a snapshot of the findings from phase one, nitrogen and phosphorus from liquid pig manure were quickly available with yields comparable to yields with synthetic fertilizer, so it is a good fertilizer. Applying manure annually at nitrogen-based rates, not surprisingly, increased soil test phosphorus levels over time. And, getting into the later years, it's triggering a shift from nitrogen-based to phosphorus-based manure application management. And this phosphorus buildup did not occur, though, when we applied manure intermittently in years one and years nine. And looking at solid manures, with solid pig and dairy manures, there's a several-year lag before that nitrogen in the manure becomes plant-available. And so initially in the first few years, we saw lower crop yields, but then in the last few years, those yields have been starting to we're showing increases as that nitrogen becomes plant-available. So these findings led to phase two of the study, which is just wrapping up now, looking at the residual, or we could say the legacy effect of this nine-year history of manure and synthetic fertilizer applications. So in this phase, crops were grown without any additional fertilizer, either as manure or synthetic fertilizer. And we're looking at answering questions like what is a long-term contribution of nitrogen supply for crops, you know, sort of that ongoing availability of nitrogen from those historic nutrient applications. How rapid is the drawdown of soil phosphorus at these sites, especially where the levels exceeded regulatory thresholds? You know, the preliminary findings from phase two, looking at the data, just looking at it the other day, they're showing a definite residual benefit of the historic applications of fertilizer and manure. And really it's suggesting that we should be monitoring this for additional years to determine how long this benefit lasts. We monitored over a two-year period, and it's looking like we should continue that work on.
How will the information gathered through this work actually be used? By whom and for what purposes?
The findings of the completed phase one of this project have been shared with MLMMI and Manitoba Pork, as both of these organizations are funding this long-term research. The data from the site has been shared with the provincial governments to expand their manure management data sets. We also maintain an archive of more than 10,000 samples and a database of 50,000 sample analyses for anyone who's interested in answering additional questions. And over the years, we've had many occasions to share the findings of this research with, say, producers, agronomists, extension specialists, academics, and even high school students, communicating the value of manure as a fertilizer and the management practices that will limit the negative impact on the environment.
With regards to the work related to the survivability and infectivity of the virus responsible for porcine epidemic diarrhea, what specifically has been looked at there and how?
So Manitoba's swine industry recognized early on the importance of better understanding the persistence of this pervasive virus in earthen manure storages under Manitoba conditions. When ASAN Kafapur began the first project with MLMMI and PAMI on this in 2014, the incidence of the disease on Manitoba farms was minimal. And, you know, flash forward a few years and we're seeing quite a different picture on the landscape. So this was the very first comprehensive study of PDV survivability and infectivity in earthen manure storages. And so a subsequent project that recently concluded focused on PDV survivability in soil following surface applications of PDV-positive manure.
What have been the key findings with regards to that PED work?
The initial work showed that not only can PDV survive our winters, the virus can potentially replicate throughout the winter in earthen manure storages. Their recently completed field investigations found detectable levels of the virus in soil samples collected 3 weeks after surface applications. But in this study, they did not assess the virus infectivity. It was not part of what was undertaken. But they see that as a critical step to understanding the risk posed by soils receiving PDV-positive manure.
What is the significance of those findings, and how is that work actually being applied, and by whom?
What we still need to understand is the potential of the virus to survive in soil and remain infective following land application of PDV-infected manure, and to answer the question of what is the potential for this soil to become a vector for spreading the disease. The planned future PDV research will examine survivability and infectivity when infected manure is applied to different soil types under different climate conditions to provide Manitoba producers with information to better understand the risks associated with managing PDV-positive manure.
In terms of the health and nutrition work, what's being looked at in that area? What are the goals and why?
Swine health and nutrition is a broad research area with a number of research program nodes led by Martin Iachotti, Chengbo Yang, and Asan Kafapur in the Animal Science Department here in the faculty. These include feed ingredients, feed additives, alternative to antibiotics, and the potential for microbiome therapy for optimal growth and performance of pigs. So just as one example, swine nutrition led by Martin Iachotti focuses on identifying and characterizing feed ingredients that are available in Western Canada that reduce feed costs, improve pig performance and health, and reduce the environmental footprint associated with feeding pigs. Feed ingredient evaluations by Niatodi and his research team have included wheat bran, hemp hulls, canola meal, flaxseed meal, sunflower meal, and DDGs, just to give an idea of the types of products that are being studied.
What are the key findings there, and what is the significance of that?
Results of each feed ingredient evaluation study are published in scientific literature and available for use by nutritionists and others in the pork industry for use in the formulation of optimized swine diets incorporating these ingredients. The emphasis of this research program is to provide feed ingredient alternatives so that Manitoba producers have access to effective and affordable feedstuffs, often formulated with ingredients grown right here in Manitoba.
How supportive has industry been of the work being conducted through the National Centre for Livestock and the Environment, and what has fueled that support?
The pork industry has been very supportive of the work conducted through both NICL and the agriculture faculty. Over the last number of years, we've seen an increased requirement by government research funding agencies for industry to contribute directly to research projects, usually as cash, as a way of confirming that industry sees a value in the type of research being proposed and, you know, sees the relevancy that researchers are looking to address the priorities of industry. So our research has been well supported through the industry-led National Swine Cluster Program, SIP, and closer to home, Manitoba Pork has been a steadfast supporter of all our swine-related research, providing essential cash for securing matching funding.
Moving into 2018, what are expected to be among the priority research areas and why?
Specifically with swine-related research, the key focus areas will continue to be swine nutrition and health, PDV research, barn flooring design features for group house sows, and manure and nutrient management research. Planned projects for the next round of cluster funding will add a meat quality and food safety element, which will draw on the meat and food science research expertise at the U of M with Argenis Rodas-Gonzalez and Claudia Narvaez.
What has prompted the heightened interest in antibiotic use within the livestock sector, and what are the factors there?
There are a number of reasons for heightened interest around antibiotic use. Upcoming regulatory changes surrounding the use of antimicrobials in livestock, mounting public concern of the connection between the use of antibiotics in food animals and the risk of antimicrobial resistance, and the growing demand for free-from products. For example, if you've been to the grocery store lately, you've just seen more and more product shelf being taken up with meat products labeled as raised without antibiotics. And these are all driving the push for research to identify viable alternatives to antibiotics use in pork production for growth performance and improved gut health. In terms of what we are doing here at the U of M, Martin Yutodi, Tengbo Yang, and Asan Kafapur are leading research programs to identify novel feed ingredients such as enzymes, probiotics, and trace minerals, coupled with viable delivery strategies to ensure that these additives work as intended in commercial production settings, and to explore the potential for gut microbiome therapy as all as alternatives to using antibiotics for growth performance and improved health. As a specific example, Chengbo Yang and his team are working with essential oils, knowing to have gut health benefits, to develop and test a microencapsulation technology to deliver the oils intact to the gut of piglets.
And is there anything that you would like to add?
I would say stay tuned. We will be running a series of research updates through Chop Talk and Farmscape in the new year, providing more detail on these and other projects. We will also feature some of the ways in which we are spreading awareness of research findings through a variety of communication avenues, including developing environmental-focused programming for high school students.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My guest has been Christine Rolick, the Research Development Coordinator with the Faculty of Agricultural and Food Sciences National Center for Livestock and the Environment at the University of Manitoba. For Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.